From America's frontier, Nebraska, it's the Outdoor Connection with Rick Windham on News Talk 1240 KODY.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Outdoor Connection. We're right at the end of the rifle or firearms deer season. We're going to be talking a little bit about that, and you're going to hear a new voice helping me on the show this morning, Sean Yater, who, if I remember right, you grew up in Idaho, right?
I did, way up north, North Idaho.
Which is hunting country.
Oh, my gosh, is it?
So, an experienced voice like that, and then now you... Or one of the sales representatives here at
yep.
the station.
So yep.
Anybody that has anything to do with the hunting and outdoor scene, Sean's the guy to talk to.
I haven't gotten out as much as I'd like to here in Nebraska. Just work has taken me so far away from the activities that I grew up enjoying. But as far as the versatile, you know, areas that you can go into around here and find different kind of game. I mean, there's pockets everywhere in Nebraska that are just fabulous to hunt.
Oh, yeah. When you, as you were growing up, what was your primary thing you went after, hunting or fishing?
Very standard. Every year we would go out and we would get an elk and we would get either one or two deer. In Idaho, they sell what's called an A and B tag, and you get one elk. And it's you can get a cow or a bull, depending on the season. You know, the one season will end, and then you can go after the other. But the B part of the tag is for two deer, and so we'd inevitably always shoot a big old cow for roast in the freezer, and then we would shoot a couple deer. Dad would, you know, shoot one that looked good to hang on the wall, and he'd shoot one that was fat to make jerky. So.
You know, it's dangerous to say here in Nebraska in cattle country, but it's sure hard to beat a cow elk.
Oh, my gosh. Well, and the big difference between, you know, where I grew up and here is the way that they're fed. You know, they can get pretty lean and pretty gamey up in the tall country in North Idaho where food gets scarce and they have to, you know, start picking the tops of the elderberry bushes, you know, for sustenance.
And sage. And
yeah, and then, you know, down here, you get them, you find one that's been wandering through the cornfields, a big muley that's been wandering through the corn for a couple months, and man, he is tasty on the dinner table.
I have people that come in from out of state to hunt with me occasionally, and they marvel at the size of the deer.
Oh, man.
And then, eventually, after the hunt is over, a month or two later, somebody will call back and say, man, this is one of the best tasting deer I've ever had. And I said, well, they're corn fed just like a
yep.
cattle.
Yep.
Well, we're finishing up our firearms deer season right now. And one of the big changes that has occurred with this due to COVID-19 is they don't have the traditional check stations where, you know, you get your deer, tag it, and then
right.
bring it in. It's all done now via your phone off of a program that Game and Parks has on their website called Telecheck.
Right.
Now, they've had Telecheck for several years and have used it during the muzzle-loading season and then the late antlerless deer season. It's very easy to use. I've used it several times. You just pull it up on your phone and it asks you a few questions. You know, click in the right things and send it off, and it says, yep, you're done. And you don't even have to leave camp if you got cell reception. So that's been very yep. good. The only drawbacks I can see on the system is a lot of times when you come in to a check station, the biologists are there, they're looking over your deer, and if they notice anything that might be an issue, say, like a disease or something like that.
They want the whole thing.
They'll take that. And a lot of times if it's something they think is serious, they'll issue you a new tag. You can go back out and get it. But it gives them a data point to look at, and then they can start tracking and mapping that
yep.
and seeing if it's a bigger problem.
The whole picture.
I think maybe we might miss some of that with everything being telechecked this year.
Agreed.
But it's not going to be a forever thing. They'll come back to the standard.
Roger, I think we'll be all right if we don't make that a permanent issue, you know, because I see other issues too, because we have a lot, you know, there, and from reporting this year, somewhere up in the north country. I won't get too specific, but there's been the reports of a lot of outer state hunters coming in and abusing our regulations, and I just don't want to see this lead to any type of abuse of regulation is all.
True. And, of course, there was the one up from around Arnold, which is turning into one of the biggest busts in wildlife trafficking ever.
Yep.
And that investigation is still going.
Yep.
So, but such are the times we have to deal
indeed.
With it and COVID and all like that.
Indeed.
One of the things I wanted to talk about this morning is, and something a lot of people don't think about, particularly with deer season, and like I said, we are wrapping it up. If you count today, there's 3 days left for the firearms deer season. So if you haven't seen a deer yet, which you know, that means you should get out of the house here in Nebraska.
Open your eyes when you're driving
Open
around.
Open your eyes, yeah. If you haven't had a chance to get a shot at a deer, or maybe not the one you want, talk to him. Bring him in. Deer are highly communicative type animals.
Absolutely.
And there's different ways that you can get them in. Probably one of the ones that people hear about the most is, you say, you rattle in a buck.
I see you got some rattlers
here. I've got some here just to demonstrate that fact. And that's exactly what it's like, two antlers, and you're clicking them together. And if you've ever been out, you know, with deer and lived with them out there and learned about them,
mm-hmm.
it is not the bullfight you might think it is. You're going to hear sounds out there where two bucks are going to come up against one another, and they'll lower their heads and basically touch antlers. And it's not going to be a big thing. It's generally not an instant fight to the death.
Yeah.
You'll hear the sounds like this, you know, it'll be just a little bit of ticking sound. And then when you hear the crash, when they actually hit together and start pushing one another, and you hear all that,
yep.
that's when it's getting more serious.
Yep.
But you can use something like this, and I would start out very soft, very easy, just clicking the tines together, and look downwind. It's amazing how far that sound is going to travel.
100%.
And you may get that buck to come in to look to see.
Yep.
You know, they're always curious, and if they are the dominant buck in that area, they're going to come see who's invading their territory.
Yeah, actually, a quick anecdote. I'll hit on that topic. Dad was a huge believer in calling them in, rattling them in. And would sit, and we actually had a pair of sheds that would bring with us, and they,
right.
you know, and this is what we would tack with every single time, and actually have called one right over the bushes we were hiding in doing our clack, and looked down, and here comes, you know, a big buck coming right over the bushes and jumping right over the top of us. 100%.
They work.
they hear that for miles.
If you're using real racks from a previous deer hunt, those are generally good for a few years, but they've done studies on that, and as they dry out, the frequency will change
right.
on the sound, and sometimes the real buck can discern that.
Yeah, because you got to think that when the antlers are still attached to them, those are living antlers.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, for the entire year, they're always growing there. But the, I guess I'd call it synthetic ones like this, they've been designed to have the right frequencies, and they don't change. And I've used them, you know, both. The one thing I like about some of the synthetic man-made ones is they're designed to pack down a little better, so you can
yes.
get them in your hunting
yep.
gear, and it's nice and easier.
A little more symmetric.
Mm-hmm. Now, the other way to call them in is use, you know, people refer to it as a buck grunt or grunting in a buck. And that's exactly what it is. Bucks do talk. They do make sounds like that. If you have been out there with them, you will probably have heard that. And it's not anything big and grandiose like an elk bugle, but you'll hear it. And that, it's just literally what it is. It's a grunt. You'll hear that, and that will bring that dominant buck in to you. He's going to come looking. And again, look downwind, because the sound's going to travel that way. But it's amazing how you can use that. I've also used it when, particularly when I had kids doing like a mentor hunt, and we have a buck and it's moving and they're not used to trying to shoot something that's walking, much less running. And I'll throw a grunt out there and that'll freeze that buck. He'll stop and turn back and look.
Yep.
And that'll give them a chance to get their shot
yep.
in. And it does work. So I've used that quite a bit. One of the oddest ones I use during this time of the rut, we're a little past the peak rut, so rattling them in may not be the most effective. They're not maybe as aggressive as they were a week ago. The grunt might not be the top one, but this last call, a lot of times we'll get a response. And are you familiar with the doe calls?
Oh, absolutely.
Just a little tube, a little short tube, and all you have to do is turn it over, and it'll...
Yep.
Kind of sounds like a little lamb calling.
Yep.
Well, that mimics a fawn or a young doe. Well, a mature doe, the natural maternal instincts are such that they're going to come looking for
yep.
that sound. This time of year, right at the end of the rut, if you get a doe coming in, what's going to be behind it?
You got a buck coming in.
Very, very good possibility of that buck falling in. So just sitting there and using this, that's all the sound you have to make. And that can call in that doe, and then watch for that buck. He may be coming in right on our trail.
Yep.
Looking for him.
Yep.
So you mentioned earlier that you guys, you know, you had your two deer and your elk, and you mentioned jerky.
Oh, yeah.
What is your favorite jerky recipe?
Well, I guess you'd have to start with either, you know, ground or whole meat. Mom is avid on doing hers whole meat, and she has for years. I like mine ground up a little bit. I like a little fat added in now. I mean, I have, you know, had it for years and years.
Right.
But give me good, heavy, thick pepper all over
oh,
that.
Okay.
Just big, thick pepper strips. Good for me.
That's good for you?
Yep.
I, when my boys were still at home, I would make, I have what they call a jerky shooter. Looks like a caulking gun.
Yeah.
And you put different ends on it so you can get a round stick or a flat stick. And
yep.
I usually make the flat stick. And
yep.
it's ground meat. I'll work that.
Yep.
And then I use a very simple seasoning. Are you familiar with Baldrige's Secret Seasoning?
Oh, I have. Mom has used Baldrige's, absolutely. I don't know if she's done the secret, but I'm sure I've tried it.
You know, that's a North Platte based business right here.
Yep.
Jim Baldrige was a big Angus rancher just to the north and west of town, and his daughter carries the business on now. And you can buy it locally in the stores. It's easy. But I'll just season my meat heavily with that and then load it in my jerky shooter and run it out on cookie sheets
mm-hmm.
and bake it. And when my boys were home, I couldn't, they weren't cool out of the oven yet, and they were all gone.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. It was like a herd of locusts had swarmed.
Well, and when you're working with venison or elk, you know, it's a very distinct smell when you're cooking it, when you're cooking that. And growing up, mom went the dehydrator way. She'd get the dehydrators out, and she'd slice them all real thin, whole
right.
meat, and then do the dehydrating. But she would have 15 dehydrators, you know, and these were like the quadruple stack.
Oh, man, know, she got serious with
tall,
it.
Tall, high, you know, dehydrators, and then she'd have them all over the house. Every outlet was, you know, plugged in, and she was running around hitting GFIs, you know, resetting outlets. But, no, walking home from school, we'd be a mile away, and I remember, you know, third grade, me and my buddy walking home from school, and you'd smell it. You'd smell it in the
oh,
air.
Oh, man.
And we'd both look at each other, and I'd be like, yep, mom's making jerky. We better hurry. We'd get home and have some.
I will use my regular oven as a dehydrator. I'll set it on the lowest setting I can get, which for my
yep.
Current oven is 170 degrees.
About right, yeah.
And it'll stay in there for a few hours that way. I like my jerky strips that when I pick them up, there'll still be a little bit
yep.
of a bend to them.
Indeed.
And then they're ready. You know, if I could ever have gotten any out, I'd just wrap them up in a baggie and put them in the refrigerator.
That was my brother's problem. See, for a few years, Mom lived here. We and all us kids still lived up in Idaho. Mom would make jerky and send it. But instead of sending it to so many addresses, she would just send it to one of us and, count on that one to distribute. Well, she figured out pretty quick not to send it to my brother Randy, because it would just disappear. We wouldn't get any.
Never got the package,
Never got
Mom.
It. Never got it.
Do you have any other good cuts that you like? Everybody likes to do the loins and stuff. But what about roast? How do you do your roast?
A typical German roast is how Mom would always make them. Just typical old fashioned roast, roast. Usually big old rump roast with on one side of a crock pot and taters.
There's the magic name right there, crock pot.
Yep, and taters and carrots and onions on the other side. But yeah, we'd crock our roasts.
My oldest boy Ian, when he was here, he likes cooking, and he actually came up with a recipe that I. Over a period of about 6 months and a number of deer roasts, I got him to standardize it. Because he cooks like I do, a little of this, a little of that.
Yeah.
Never write it down.
Nope.
Well, we finally got it written down, and I did get it into one of my cookbooks.
Nice.
And it's got kind of a Cajun flair to it. He likes a little bit of spice with his.
Absolutely.
And one of the unique seasonings that he used in it that you don't often see very much in cooking outside of Creole cooking is white pepper.
Ooh.
And he has a lot of white pepper in it, so it turned out very, very well. The other ones, like, the loins and backstraps type thing, my favorite way of doing that is taking the loins and then slicing them into about 3/4-inch pieces, the width mm-hmm. of the loin, to make like little medallion steaks.
Yep.
And then I will take them and put them on my cutting board and pull out my meat tenderizer hammer and just flatten them out until they're about 1/4-inch thick and about double the original size.
Yep.
And then I'll make an egg wash and add, my coating to it.
You're making a country fried venison steak.
Exactly. And I don't know what it is, but I use Zesta saltine crackers.
Nice.
They give it a better flavor than anybody else's cracker. And then I will cook that. Generally fry that in like the butter flavored Crisco.
Yeah.
And I have never had any of that left over in camp either. Everybody's
nice.
All over that one.
Nice.
So
I was going to say, I did just try a buddy's venison chili that he made, and it had a very excellent spice to it, but he did not give me any secrets to his recipe, and I don't know where he shot his deer, so I don't know.
I can give you a chili recipe that is quite well known. I've done it several times on national TV. I've even had it in some competitions.
Nice.
And stuff, and it's done very well.
I do love chili.
So I'll make some, bring it in sometime for you. That's going to wrap up the show for this week, folks. We'll see you next time with another edition of the Outdoor Connection. Have a great weekend.